Socks on 35th is next. Doors open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Duke Coughlin, and welcome to the Socks on 35th podcast. We are back with another exciting two-win episode covering your Chicago White Sox. As always, I'm joined by our panelists, Jordan Lazowski and Nick Gower. Gentlemen, what are we still doing here?
That is actually a great lead-in to what I've got prepared for this. Gentlemen, this is our 50th episode, believe it or not. So by the end of this episode, give or take, it's not perfect math, but we will have spent 50 hours covering the White Sox just on this podcast, talking about them. 50 hours is a lot of time. I did some research, you know, what could we have been doing with that time instead? Well, you could have learned a new programming language, something like that. You could have watched Moneyball 22 and change times. 50 hours is 9/10 as long as the Great Chicago Fire, which feels relevant with this team a little bit. 3.5 times as long as the first light bulb test. 50 hours is 6 times as long as the longest pro baseball game. It is 1/35 as long as Columbus's voyage to America. And I felt this one incredibly relevant. It is about half as long as the voyage of the Titanic. So by the time the season ends, we're close to about the entire time they were on the Titanic. And I feel like we're on our own little sinking ship here talking about this team. Boys, here's to 50, but holy crap, there's 50 more behind it.
All right. You really came prepared today. I guess Duke came.
I did. Yeah. I was tired of getting crap.
So I do want to pop in and say that you are now 0-3 just based on the fact that was way over rehearsed. No one's going to believe it. It's what, not
over. No, it was not over rehearsed. All I had to do was look at what everything was on here.
Listen, I can't speak for the viewers at home, but the viewers at home are going to just completely rip that to shreds.
Why? You want me to come prepared? I came prepared with content. There you go. You can't have it both ways.
Can and I will. Nick, why are you still here?
Yeah, no, that's also a great question. I had a funny conversation with my girlfriend this morning where we left our apartment around noon and we were on the highway driving south, like kind of toward the direction of the stadium. And I'm saying to her, wow, it's a beautiful Sunday in April. We left an hour before the game, heading close to the game. We're not going to the game. If you told me this like 2 years ago, I would say, did the White Sox move? Is there another lockout? Like, what is happening? In reality, we're going to the beach and I don't want to be anywhere near this team. And now there I was 5 hours later looking for tickets to tomorrow's game because Nick Nastrini is starting and I want to watch him pitch. So it's still a love-hate relationship. I mean, I'm not excited necessarily to go to the game. I'm just going literally only because of Nastrini. But yeah, why am I still here? I don't know, but it is what it is.
Well, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, no matter how bad any of your favorite sports teams are, nothing beats going to a stadium in the summer in Chicago. That's really what it comes down to. You know, as somebody who has to drive all the way from, you know, Madison, Wisconsin to go to White Sox games all the time. And all the time is used very loosely this season, by the way. That's like the only appeal, is being able to be in the city in the summer on a Saturday and being able to be outside and do something. You know,
it's also the Titanic analogy. Like, they couldn't get off, neither can we. So why am I still here? I can't get off.
Yeah, I mean, my ankle's literally chained to the radiator. Like, I'm screwed, but I guess I'm just going to try to roll with the punches and enjoy it until I drown. But, you know, we have quite a bit to cover in the episode. You know, you brought up a great point with, you know, friend of the podcast, Nick Nastrini, who now eats mustard on his hot dogs, has now made it to the Major League roster. But before we get started, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcast. Also, be sure to check out the website, socksonthirtyfifth.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at socksonthirtyfifth. So, obviously, let's roll right in to what you were just talking about, Nick. Nick Nastrini has been promoted to the Major League roster. It's looking very possible that he'll end up taking a rotation spot and running with it. At least we can only hope. And that kind of really begs the question of whose spot is he taking? And then that also begs the question about where Mike Clevinger possibly fits in this picture down the road. How do you feel about A, Nick Nastrini making it to the Major League roster? And B, where do you think he fits in this rotation with the other moving pieces?
Yeah, we kind of had a feeling this was coming just because they kept skipping that fifth rotation spot. They either didn't have to play the game. They could just reset the rotation, or they bullpened it. And not a viable strategy. You knew there was a little bit longer runway for Clevinger. The obvious assumption is they're going to promote him to the majors once he's ready. Otherwise, why even sign him? So you look at the rotation. Yes, for now, Nestrini's the fifth starter. I would say he's probably the fifth starter for the rest of the season. I don't see a reason to pull one of the exciting things that fans have away from them in a couple of weeks, unless he is just really, really, really struggling. And I don't see that to be the case. I'm very excited about it. I think we all knew this was how the season was going to start. They were going to be bad. I didn't think they'd be this bad, but you knew they'd be bad. This is where they start giving you reasons to watch, reasons to go to the ballpark. I tweeted that when we put out the Nestrini news. A lot of people disagreed with me, but I think to Nick's point, you know, looking for tickets to go to the game, there are people who are now going to be a little bit more invested. That'll be the same when Montgomery comes up, players like that. It's a good thing for the White Sox.
Yeah, I agree with you. Even if other people don't, that's like the one thing pulling me toward a game this season. I haven't been yet. But yeah, I agree, Jordan, that Nestrini, unless he gets absolutely shelled in multiple starts, should ideally stay in the major league rotation. And when Clevinger joins in the coming weeks, I'd imagine it's for Chris Flexen, just because I feel like of the four starters so far, Flexen has been the least impressive. And going a bit longer term than that, I mean, there are obviously a lot of different moving parts here, but if there was somebody like, say, like Jared Schuster, for example, is, you know, pitching really well for whatever reason and might be deserving of a bigger look than I think he's in the bullpen right now than whatever he is right now, I would maybe look at Michael Soroka as the next guy to maybe consider, just because his stuff has looked a little flat to me and the results just aren't there either. I mean, you don't have to be a strikeout guy in this day and age, but if you're striking out like, you know, two or three batters per start, that's where it's like a little like, okay, you got to be a little better than that, or you have to never walk anybody, which unfortunately is not the case with him. So I haven't been very impressed with him so far. And if there's somebody that would like have to be removed from the rotation, I would go Flexen and then him. But then again, this is the White Sox. People will get injured. People will underperform. And there's always going to be some sort of spot, in my opinion. So we'll see how things go. That's just my view for now.
Yeah, Michael Soroka has gone from, oh, might be able to trade him for a top 100 guy in a lot of people's minds, to, oh no, this is awful. He has walked more than he struck out this year. As a pitch-to-contact guy, that can't happen. And Nick, to your point, yes, his stuff has looked flat, it's looked unimpressive, and he talked about reforming himself as a pitcher, needing to, you know, I'm not the same guy that won the Cy Young Award, I came close to Rookie of the Year, back in 2019, but he's acting like the same pitcher. The pitch shapes really haven't changed. The pitch breakdown hasn't really changed. So the idea of reinventing yourself hasn't played out yet. And you're seeing the results of why you probably, besides the injuries, weren't as successful after that 2019 season. I agree. Flexen's got to go first. I never understood that signing at the time. I understand it even less now watching him pitch. And Soroka's honestly at this rate not far behind.
Well, and it kind of felt like, especially Flex and Soroka, these have been really the two guys that have kind of really felt like placeholders as far as guys in the rotation. You know, you can probably make a little bit of the same argument with a guy like Eric Fetty if he wasn't pitching well, you know, just on the fact of age. But I mean, it seems like his spot is pretty safe. You know, obviously Garrett Crochet is set. You know what I mean? But outside of that, like, I really think it's going to all depend on the pitchers in AAA who end up really showing out and doing well. I think those are going to be guys that are going to get the opportunity to get brought up. Whether or not that's the case, you know, I don't know what the White Sox plan to do about possibly moving these guys up to the majors faster. But seeing Nestrini get up to the major league roster is definitely a step in the right direction. I'm with you guys. I don't think he's going anywhere once he's up here. And, you know, even to the point about Soroka, you know, it's a shame watching him struggle, because you still see like glimpses of what he was, which is kind of like, it hurts. It hurts because, like, you know, this guy can be this, but he just continues to struggle mercilessly with the walks and with his lack of strikeouts, because, like, he gets killed in the third inning on Sunday, for example, comes out for the fourth. And his slider immediately just had just so much more life on it. And it's like, where was this? You know, it's like, why did we have to wait until you took all this damage, you took these walks before you finally really kind of honed in? You really hope with a guy like Nick DeStrutti being called up that he immediately kind of takes the opportunity, sees the opportunity in front of him, and really just runs with it. And it's another guy where people are going to really have to be patient with him, because he's going to show flashes, but he is going to struggle. That's just the nature. I mean, not a lot of young pitchers, especially not highly, highly touted prospects, are going to jump right in the major league game and just hit the ground running. So really with Nastrini, if I can just do a fair warning to most fans out there, just look for the positives in him and look at ways he can improve. Don't just immediately jump down his throat if he has a bad outing.
Yeah, there's much bigger complaints to have about the team than whatever Nick Nastrini offers, is I think the point of that. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a challenge. He hasn't looked great to start in AAA. That's fine. The reality is they need a fifth starter. There's really nobody better, especially considering the four starter and the three starter also kind of stink right now. And by kind of, I mean a lot. Soroka's interesting because it's for the same reason, Duke. The slider sometimes looks really good. I'm like, oh, that is a really good pitch. The rest of it just hasn't come together. So I guess if there's people who are holding out hope, it's that there's glimpses of stuff, there's flashes of stuff, but man, it's just, it's hard when you're walking that many guys as a pitch to contact guy. It's hard for me to go, oh, the stuff, because you still are a pitch to contact guy. It's not like you're going to turn around and start striking everybody out.
Yeah, I think a couple of quick things to add there. I think those are definitely fair points on riding with Soroka, you know, because there's more upside than someone like Flexen. I do agree with that. And one thing that also kind of supports that point is when you talk about Crochet, who is like the only starter who is unquestionably, you know, 100% earned his spot for the whole season and whatnot. He's already thrown 22 innings. We don't know what his quote unquote limit might be, but say it's around 100. That's kind of the magic number. Then he's already like a quarter of the way through his season. So you'll need to have somebody, whether it's Soroka or, you know, even someone like Schuster, like we mentioned a little bit, you need to have somebody ready to pick up that slack. As for Nastrini, I also agree with you guys. I think the AAA performance this year, apparently he was sick during his first start, so who knows like how much that affected him. That first start was also against the Baltimore AAA team, which I'm not even kidding when I say that lineup is like way better than the White Sox. Like, it's insane that they don't call some of those guys up. And I get that they have established pieces, but like at a certain point, I don't need to see, if I'm an Orioles fan, I don't need to see like Jorge Mateo types in the outfield, or when you have like Kerstad and other guys in AAA, but like a 1.8 OPS. But this is not Orioles talk or whatever. I'm just saying. So I agree with you guys overall. There's a lot of, there's more untapped potential with Soroka, so I'm fine with sticking with him for now. It's just that if you get to a point where maybe Crochet has a longer leash than you think, or maybe, you know, something like Schuster or somebody randomly comes out of nowhere and is pitching really well, maybe it's Drew Thorpe even later in the year, you know, then you have more options there.
Well, and I think even to the Schuster point, you know, that's a guy that I really wouldn't mind us seeing get, you know, a little bit longer of a look at. And, you know, you bring up a great point that I guess I really wasn't thinking of when I made the Crochet point originally about his innings. And at the end of the day, we can't just like start DFAing guys. We can't afford to do that because we just flat out don't have the arms in the barn to be able to do
See,
that.
See, I don't disagree. You know? I don't agree with that, though. Like, if someone's not performing, but, okay, get rid of them. Like, set.
Okay, so who do you street? Yeah, but you potentially ruin the development of a AAA pitcher by rushing
him.
There's
always somebody on the street to sign who's available that you can give some innings to. Look at what they did with Tuki Toussaint for a little bit. Like, there's always somebody else you could. Don't subject the fans to this same, like, if Soroka's got like a 7 ERA and we're heading into June, why are you going to keep subjecting fans to the same crap? Try something different. There are guys in the minors you don't have to rush. You don't have to rush your best guys. You can always sign someone who's somewhere looking for a job. Even if they're just as bad, try something different.
Okay, so do you know who our owner is?
Well, how much is that going to cost? Like $500,000?
So you have to pay the guy you release, and you have to pay the guy you bring in, who is just as bad. You're literally paying extra to get the exact same performance.
This is a larger gripe I have with the idea of sunk cost that apparently a lot of people can't comprehend. Not saying you, but saying reports I've read there is a lack of understanding of sunk costs, apparently, within the organization. To that point, like, yeah, Duke, I get it. I would disagree. That's a sunk cost. Who cares? If he sucks, get rid of him. I don't care. You already have to pay that.
Jerry Reinsdorf is the entire point I'm making to you.
Like I said, I understand it's not your point necessarily. It's just a fair counterpoint of the reality of the situation.
Dude, I've been playing MLB The Show for the last week, literally destroying the Chicago White Sox and bringing in as many prospects as I possibly can. So you are preaching to the choir about getting people out who suck, and I don't care about the money. Because,
like, for me, it's just, though, it's all, everything so far has been about preaching accountability and, you know, the merits. We talked about this, the merits of some guys making the Major League roster based on the good springs they have. That's good stuff. But now you got to do the flip side of the coin, too. Otherwise, we're going to be here on episode 57. Like, yep, these guys still stink. What else do you want us to talk about? Like, that's where, from a fan engagement perspective, it's already so low. I know there's all the money and all that stuff. Like, I get it. And I know how they tend to operate. I get it. But, man, you are going to make it even worse than it already is if you just keep the same old, no accountability, nothing changes. I hope they don't. They spend so much time talking about depth. I hope they can find something else. Sorry, that's my little sunk cost rant I had ready. Sorry.
Okay, so, like, that also kind of plays into, you know, I guess my biggest gripe, you know, I don't even think it would necessarily be with, like, the players per se. I mean, there's only so much they can do about it. They're here. You know what I mean? Like, they signed a contract. Chris Getz is the one who brought him in. My biggest gripe is, how long do we continue to beat the freaking Pedro Grifol drum? Like, are we going to continue to just let this season just completely be a wash?
But what does it change? What does a new manager change about this team?
What do new players change to what we're doing?
The players are the problem. What do you mean, what do new players change? Get different players.
The players are the problem and not the manager.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all the problem, if we're being honest.
They're all the problem, but if you're going to put on a scale, like, where the blame falls, I'm going to put the talentless players above the talentless manager 10 times out of 10.
I'm going to put the manager who doesn't even know how to build a lineup and can't run a bullpen, and he's the one who
sets the lineup. What would you do differently with this lineup?
He sets the rotations. He sets the lineup.
You have your three best hitters are not in this lineup. What do you want him to do? We had this same argument last year. I remember this exact same argument last year of, like, this team is terrible, but we blame. How is this? Like, I struggle with this because there is an envisionment of a team that he likes this. So just like Getz has fault for this, Grifol has some as well. This is his idea of a scrappy defensive ball club that's currently 27th in defensive run saved. They suck. Like, he plays a part in that. But in terms of the day-to-day of this team, what lineup decision is he doing differently that is going to turn this from 2-13 to anything other than, like, 4-11?
So with this idea, this would essentially cleanse him of having any say-so on the 40-man roster, then.
Who's on the 40-man roster that they're, like, who's fixing this?
Why not try guys from AAA to bring him up? Why not try a guy like Brian Ramos, who is on the older side of prospects, if we're considering a guy that hasn't
been up there? Because Brian Ramos is hitting .077 right now in AA. He has bigger problems right now than trying to hit at the major league level and skip AAA. Like, that's a very valid reason. The 40-man roster construction, that is a Getz problem. Like, 40-man roster has so much dead weight on it, it's unbelievable. But what are you going to, like... is, like, and I'm a big Danny Mendick guy. Is bringing up Danny Mendick to be the seventh middle infielder on this team right now going to make this team any better? Like, I don't know where the good talent is coming from.
I just don't understand how you can just kind of really leave Grifol out of a lot of these issues.
At the
end of the day, these guys don't seem like they're showing up ready to play baseball at the ballpark. Like, even when we've been in close games early on in the season, like, bullpen management has been horrendous. Like, the fact that Brian Shaw was being put in high leverage situations is hilarious. Like, the fact that we have a guy in Michael Kopech who we're trying to put into a closer role to potentially make him a trade piece at the deadline, and we're putting him in games that were either that were down six runs in to pitch multiple innings is a joke. Like, this is a guy who has genuinely built a culture of accountability, but no accountability is shown whenever guys are struggling. A guy who I very much enjoy, Andrew Benintendi, has been struggling mightily, yet he is in the lineup every single day. You have a guy in Martin Maldonado who hasn't hit anything, yet we want to refuse to play Corey Lee. Like, there is, you're kidding me. Like, there's
those are two
show accountability on this roster that Pedro Grifol is flat out not doing. I don't care if he's being handed chicken shit, make it in a chicken salad. That is your job. I'm not saying that I need you to win the AL Central or do anything crazy. Two games, Laz. Two. Are you kidding me? That has nothing to do with Pedro Grifol.
Okay, fine. They're 4-11 instead of 2-13. Like, get rid of him. Fine. I don't care. I don't particularly think he's a great manager. But the fact that there's any...
He's not. He's not even a good manager. He's one of the worst managers I've seen this team have in years.
But the fact that we have to take a step back and look and say, okay, we could have Terry Francona in here right now, and this team is at best, like, a six-win baseball team. If you are God Almighty himself, you can't put talent into this team where it doesn't exist. If Andrew Benintendi can't hit the baseball, he's the best hitter in this lineup right now in terms of back of a baseball card. If he's not going to perform, and you got Braden Shoemake, Nicky Lopez, Paul DeJong on the roster, guys who don't historically hit, are we surprised this team is scoring, like, abysmally historically low? No, it's like, who is gonna fix this? Like, Grifol being a problem is absolutely part of the list. The fact that Robbie Grossman has to be the team's leadoff hitter because no one else knows how to draw a walk is the ultimate problem.
All I'm saying is, all I hear about is accountability, and we continue to see the same guys on the field every single day. You know, to your point, even with Lopez and everything like that, I understand the lack of talent as far as guys that we have starting. I need more people in the mix. Then you need to get guys more involved. You need to get guys who are sitting on that bench every single day to get on the field more often. There needs to be more rotational players if we're not going to get that type of production out of guys. Like, we can't look at an Andrew Benintendi just because of his contract and play him every day just for the sake of it. Like, he's struggling mightily, probably needs a day or two off to kind of get his head right, or, you know, just potentially just to not have to play baseball for a little bit, because obviously something's really going wrong there. Listen, I know you gave
me shit about
Corey Lee going into this season, but, like, the fact that it's taken already this long for him to get playing time, as Martin Maldonado's not even batting 100, is concerning.
And that's all fine. Those are two legitimate things. Here's the problem, though. Bench Andrew Benintendi, fine. You're putting in Kevin Pillar in the left field. Is that fixing anything? Like,
accountability.
Yeah, but you'd still... But yes, but still. I agree with that point. I just don't know that there's a manager who's going to come in here and act differently. That is a larger question about the state of the job itself. Is, even if you fire Pedro Grifol, this entire roster, this entire situation is such a dumpster fire right now. Is there somebody who's like, who looks at this team that could do that piece of accountability, who could do all of that stuff, who can make chicken shit in a chicken salad, and wants this job? Is, I wouldn't. If I was a half decent manager, or if I was a guy looking for my first shot, I wouldn't want to come in here. I'd know I'd automatically fail no matter what I did. Like, that's part of a larger issue. Yeah, they could fire Grifol and let anyone else run this team. They could let a fan run this team for all I care. It's not going to fix the fact that it starts with the lack of talent on this ball.
Well, it would, I think, just for the sake, you know, just because I'm really banging the drum of accountability, because it's all I ever hear from the front office, from the manager, from all the coaching staff. Like, it's getting to the point where if we don't start winning some games here soon, like, it's getting historically bad start vibes. Like, we're getting there. Like, we're gonna set records. Like, at this point, what do we gain by keeping Pedro Grifol around? Like, at the very least, if you fire a manager, you know, and this has historically been a thing with a lot of teams that have fired managers early on in the season, it at least puts a little bit of a notice on the guys in the locker room, like, okay, I could be next. Like, because I don't know, maybe that's not real enough to some of these guys. Maybe they don't realize that this is genuinely probably their last MLB opportunity if they can't make it work with the 2024 White Sox, who are literally drowning for talent or drowning for production. If you can't produce on this team, what team is even going to look at you twice? You know what I mean? So maybe that level just at least makes some people try to actually consider, like, hey, I need to actually perform. I can't just take the paycheck and be on a terrible team.
I'd like to start with the players with that mentality. Like, these are all guys who are like, hey, we're looking for our shots. We're looking for this. We talked about it on the last podcast. First three games, this team was watchable. They were hustling. They were this. They were that. It was at least a watchable form of losing. It has not been that since then. Then start with getting rid of the guys and then go to the manager. I think you make more of an impact going to the guys than the manager. I don't care if they fire Pedro Grifol. I just think there's another element to it as well that hasn't been discussed, is Getz basically, his first act as general manager was committing to this guy. What happens after 15 games if he turns around and goes, uh-oh, I was wrong, and here's me firing him? Any shred of credibility that he wants to have goes right out the window. That's why I think he's going to be around. I don't think that's a good reason, but I think that's why he's going to be around. But the reality is there are other ways to fix this while you still have to deal with Pedro Grifol being your manager.
I mean, I think it's an interesting debate too, because all we heard from spring training, all the puff pieces were, oh, these players are, you know, 32 years old and aren't that good, so they're going to be scrappy. They know this is their last chance, and that's why they'll always play hard. And we haven't.
No, it's just that they're not good.
Well, of course. So I guess the question is the fact that they're not even playing part anymore, is that their fault? Is that the manager's fault? Like, that's where I don't have the answers. It is kind of funny, though, seeing this debate play out like live as more of a spectator, because we published an article last week of mine that was like 12 progressively hotter White Sox takes. Like, the first one was like everyone would agree with it, and the last one was like unpopular. And the last one that I wrote was basically with Jordan saying that I don't like Pedro Grifol. If they fire him, great. But I just don't think it would make much of a difference from a watchability or win-loss standpoint, just mostly to Jordan's point. So it's kind of funny seeing the debate happen right after I wrote about it. But, I mean, it's something to talk about, at least, because I don't think anyone likes Grifol as a manager. But at the same time, it's like you watch these players, to Jordan's point, and it's like, what, other than Duke's, you know, bench this player, bench that player, I agree with that. But then it's the people you're replacing them with. Like, the problem is that their depth pieces are so bad. Like, they have depth this year a little bit. Like, they have, like, Brad Keller types lying around in AAA, if you want to use a pitcher example. But that's still, like, while it's better than past seasons, that's not saying anything, you know? Because in past seasons, it just didn't exist. Now you have players down there that had a 6 ERA last year or hit 150 last year. And it's like, okay, great, you have somebody. Does it matter?
Here's my answer to your question about, like, who is to blame for the fact that we have guys, or the Sox have guys, who have stopped hustling? If you're a 32-year-old scrappy baseball player, quote unquote, and you need to be told by your manager to hustle, you are not the scrappy player that people claim you are. Yes, managers have to hold players accountable, but if you are a 32-year-old veteran of this league, knowing you're on your last leg, because who else is going to sign you, to Duke's point, if you can't perform on the Chicago White Sox this season and you can't be bothered to hustle? One of the tenets of a Pedro Grifol team, that's on you, dude. Like, I get the manager's got to hold someone accountable somehow, But dude, if you can't do that, and that's part of your brand of baseball as this scrappy vet, you're just as much of the problem.
So my biggest issue, I guess, with that would be, is this, we've really did a lot of roster overhaul in the last year, and it's not really a lot different of a product. Like, it's, we brought in quite a few different people.
It's worse. It is way worse.
It's still just really bad.
Yeah. They turned over an entire 25-man roster, had like three or four of the same guys, and found 21 worse players than the ones they had before. That is impressive to do.
But my entire point is like, it's continuing to be this, like, really the same thing that we saw last. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we finished with a near identical record to what we finished last year. Like, if they get to that,
I'll be thrilled.
There's going to be a tipping point, you know, all memes aside, there's going to be a tipping point where the Sox are going to win. They're not going to lose 140 games. That's just not going to happen. You could put me on record for that. I'll make a $100 bet with you right now, Les. They're not going to lose 140.
They might find a way to get close. This is
$100, buddy.
Sad.
Right on the pod.
Well, 140 is a lot, but like, they're going to, okay, they're going to be historically bad.
My point is, it's becoming, how many players are we going to continue to bring in before we just, while we're kind of ignoring the elephant in the room of, this guy's not getting anything out of anybody. Like,
that is a very fair point. I completely agree with that point. I just don't know. At the same time, it's the classic, is the manager or the player? We have had this argument so many times. I just don't know who comes into this situation. I don't think it's Charlie Montoyo. I don't think the bench coach is going to fix this. I don't know who looks at this job and has that ability to get more out of players and comes in and fixes this. From a watchability standpoint, Nick, to your point, there is not a single manager who they would bring in or who would want to even come in that's going to get more out of these guys. That's not saying that person doesn't exist. It's just saying, why in the world would you want to come here to do it? What could you do other than tarnish your own legacy as a top-tier manager than come to the Chicago White Sox of 2024?
You're not wrong to that point, but sports are funny, dude. Sometimes you find that one hungry guy who just doesn't care. He just wants a manager job. I mean, you look at like the NFL with like Dan Campbell with the freaking Detroit Lions. Nobody wanted that job. Nobody wanted to go deal with a Jared Goff contract, and there was just no future there. The guy just played in the NFC Championship, and he's completely embraced it. That I know that's a bad, like, I know that's a really like bad type of example to make because it's kind of the exception, not the rule. But they're out there, man. There is a lot of coaches in Major League Baseball who have not gotten an opportunity to even smell a bench coach position that would jump in a manager position just for the sake of getting the chance.
But would they be good? But would they be any good? That's the thing.
Good managers didn't start good.
Grafal spent years as a bench coach.
Good managers didn't start good. They didn't just pop out of the tree with 300 wins under their belt.
I agree. I completely agree with you. And because here's the thing, that's an entirely
different discussion.
Right. But I agree with that because I made that argument last year with Grafal. It's like, give him a year, figure it out. And then he comes back here. Nothing changes. Team looks terrible. Team's worse. And it's built in his image and likeness. It's just, it is such a hard situation. I'm also like personally of the a little bit belief that you can play as hard as you want, but that doesn't create talent, especially in baseball. Like, playing really hard and being a grinder, one of my favorite Sox guys, the randomest player, JB Shuck. Dude ran out everything, played hard. Like, I liked watching him. For as hard as he played, it didn't create talent out of thin air. I just don't know that on this roster, there is... Like, even if we wanted to say, yes, we brought in a guy who can get the most out of players, who's he getting more out of? Benintendi? I think anyone could probably do that. He's a veteran. He should be able to do that himself. He shouldn't need a manager. Who else? No one else has the talent on this roster. That's the bigger issue.
I think there's something there with, and I've said it before, but I do think there is something to Dominic Fletcher.
That's a good example. So we have two out of the 25-man roster.
As well as Corey Lee and as well as Gavin Sheets potentially finding a way to be an everyday first baseman.
All right, we got four out of 25.
All right, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and make the defense for Lenin Sosa. That's Nick's job. But
I was going to say, I would pick him for those guys.
But, I mean, honestly, there are some pieces like that sprinkled in. Like, the Kevin Pillar, I can't defend that. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to. But, like, those are, like, guys that I want to see get, like, more of a spotlight. And like, my biggest gripes with Grifol is when I just continue to see a Martin Maldonado and not Corey Lee. And I understand catchers can't start every day. That's just not fair to their knees. You know what I mean? But also, Martin Maldonado's old. Like, what? He shouldn't be starting every day anyway.
If they can push that to a 50-50 split, that will be fine enough.
Holy crap. At the very least, you know what I mean? And yeah. Obviously, it's not a split situation because it's not like, you know, they bat off the same side. And it's not like Corey Lee has enough career stats in the major league roster to be able to show that he's got really definitive splits yet. But all I know is I see competitive at bats out of the guy. You know, he's pretty good defensively. He's a good athlete. I don't know if you saw him run out to first base earlier on a ground ball, of course. But, I mean, the guy can move for a catcher. I'd almost be interested to see if he could potentially play first base a little bit down the line if he continues to show with his bat. Because obviously you have a guy like Edgar Cuero potentially coming up to be a top prospect at catcher, but that's a little bit more down the road, and seeing where the hell this team is in a year is hilarious. I guess, speaking of which, you really flew off the rails.
What even started that argument?
Right.
me and Laz trying to talk over each other, which is usually about how it works.
Yeah. It's called a typical Sunday around here.
No, it's just I very much dislike Pedro Grifol, and it's not even a defense of the players when I just discuss him, but he does so many things that just it goes so much against what I traditionally know about baseball and what I've like known from playing and known from watching for years and years. Like, there's so much that just throws it off. His bullpen. I just really hate his bullpen management as well. But again, hard.
I hate that we're in the same situation kind of as before. Before it was Han and Williams and Tony were like, who's to blame for all of this? Is it the players? Is it the people who put them here? Is it the manager on the field? We're doing the same thing again. Getz versus Grifol. Is it the guy who put the players on the field? Is it the one filling out the lineups? Is it the players? Who's the one to blame? We're doing it again. Like, go back. Our podcast didn't go far that back, but go back and listen to the arguments from 2022. Like, we're doing it again, guys, and it's not fun. That's what's frustrating.
It's also sort of the same problems as, like, I'm not a fan of Grifol's lineups or bullpen management either, but, like, when you're looking at batting Kevin Pillar cleanup, it's like, yeah, I don't like that, but La Russa batted Leury García number three. And when you talk about bullpen management, like, I don't agree with pitching Kopech when you're down four or five, whatever it was. But it's like, it's not that different from La Russa leaving Matt Foster in after he's already allowed seven runs in an inning as a reliever. Like every White Sox manager, other than like maybe Renteria, was a little better in this department, had the, like,
Jose Ruiz faced Jose Ramirez in a game the White Sox needed to win under Rick Renteria. Let's not.
Yeah, I'm not
too
very
far into the Renteria train.
I guess Renteria's of the last four, including Robin, that's the last one. Of the last four, he's
the least offensive, yes.
But I still
didn't
like him.
He is the least offensive. No, yeah. I didn't like him, but he is the least offensive of them. If you want a guy who actually seemed to get the most out of guys, Renteria's probably a good example. Yeah. Those teams were fun. They sucked, but they were fun.
Listen, I'll say this, so, man. You know, as much as we can complain about, and rightfully so, that Tony La Russa-led 2021 team, I would take that back in a heartbeat. I would just...
Tony La Russa? I would not.
No, just to go back to 2021 and actually enjoy it instead of being upset about game decisions because we actually won, I'd go back in a heartbeat. I would actually go back and I'd enjoy all of it because I feel like none of us took the time to actually enjoy it as it was happening. We were constantly complaining. We were constantly wanting more. We were constantly looking at the terrible decisions Tony La Russa was making that we never really embraced it and enjoyed it. And by the time it was gone, I don't think any of us realized what we actually had there.
Yeah, that's very true, honestly. It's like, how did we get here? How do we not appreciate what we had at that point? So it's a very, very good point.
Yeah, I think there was also an assumption at the time that, like, yeah, La Russa is doing this and we're upset about it, but this team will be so good in 2022. This team will be so good in 2023. Just wait until these guys continue developing. And then all those guys just like fell off a cliff. So like part of it is we thought we'd have more time than we did, I think.
I watched a 2021 highlight video the other day and it actually kind of made me smile, but it also kind of made me sad. Speaking of making me smile and also making me very sad, Yoel Makata has made me smile a lot throughout his career, but he's also made me very sad of what I've had to watch the last couple of years. And it's looking very possible that he's played his last game in a White Sox uniform. Fortunate as it is, this is probably a pretty good point to close out on because me and Jordan wanted to scream at each other for like half an hour. But
I'm sure people were entertained by that. I'm not going to feel that bad about it.
No, I don't feel bad at all. I just feel bad for Nick.
I do. So before we move on, I once in a while look at Nick just like, these two idiots are insane. I can read it all over his face. Like, these two guys are out of their minds. This is the 2024 White Sox, and they are getting in a 20-minute shouting match over whether or not they should play guys like Nicky Lopez and Andrew Benintendi. This is where we're at.
Yeah. I mean, it's always entertaining because I could see him kind of looking back and forth to us on both sides of the screen as we're like going back and forth. And it's like, gosh, Nick is just like, what the hell is wrong with these two? But to finish up the question, so obviously Yoel Makata, you know, with the injury, it's looking like, you know, there's potential if we get into the playoff for sure to be able to make a comeback. But it's probably over. Lenine Sosa has obviously been getting the reps at third base since. Do you guys, and Nick, I'll let you start with this because me and Jordan have talked more than enough.
I'm going to need a counter of how many times over the past 50 podcasts you've said that. It's so true.
It's just the nature of it, man. That's a Sox on 35th podcast right there for you. Besides Lenine Sosa, who else would you like to see possibly get reps at third base? You know, even if it was like something as simple as a platoon.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's a crushing blow to my my like White Sox drafted team from last week or whatever. It's like
war of attrition, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Like one day after that draft, 2 days after that draft, he's like out for 4 months, whatever. But anyway, that was part of the risk of drafting him, of course, as was the case with Robert and Jimenez, although they were already injured. Anyway, yeah, to answer your actual question, Duke, Sosa for now, because it's April and nobody is, you know, really ready for that kind of role. I think longer term, I know Brian Ramos has been terrible to start this season, but there's really not a better time than right now. Like, he's not old, but he's been in the organization for 5 years. He's been taking up a spot in the 40-man roster, assuming that he didn't just forget how to hit over the winter. In like June, if he's even straight from Double A, I would consider if in June he's actually hitting well, you know, and I'm saying June, it could be July, could be late May, whatever. If he finally goes on a little stretch that's more like his career numbers, then that's somebody I'd like to see, just because you'll know a lot more going into 2025 about what you have at the third base spot. But really, the answer I would have liked to have given, and I'm not trying to like obviously guess and whomever couldn't have known this injury was going to happen, but it's annoying because you just got rid of Jose Rodriguez, who is now healthy and like was like playing really well in his first weekend with the Phillies AAA team. And like, that's a guy who would have made sense to get major, even for that second base, and you move like Nicky Lopez to third or something. Like, this is where you need guys like that, like triple A guys who, sure, they're probably not going to amount to anything, but they're at least young and have talent, unlike, you know, 90% of your active rosters. So that's who I would like to have said, but I think Sosa and Ramos will have to do for now, because otherwise there aren't really any third base or infield prospects, in my opinion, that are close enough to the majors and also intriguing enough, unless of course you're talking about like Remillard and Mendick and guys who are just kind of there but not really long-term pieces,
which is insanely scary when you look at it, because they've done a better job building up the farm. And it's kind of ironic that for as many first baseman, corner infielder type guys that they've had throughout the years, they currently have no exciting ones outside of Ramos, and he's still a little bit away. It's not a good situation to be in. I think I have long beaten the drum of when shit has hit the fan and you are a terrible baseball team, The best thing you can do is figure out your future. So Lenin Sosa, is he or isn't he? I don't really know. Could he be? Maybe. Do I think 2022 has a lot of fluky tendencies in it that he hasn't really replicated? Yes. For example, walking as much as he did and just being as selective as he was. Haven't really seen that, both last year and the start of this year. Do I care right now? No, not necessarily, because someone has to play 100-something games over at third base. Lenin Sosa is my obvious one. I just don't want to see more of Braden Shumake. I don't care to see more of Paul DeJong, Nicky Lopez. I care to see an adequate amount of them. I just think it's frustrating when you look at I think it was Saturday or Friday when I was watching the game, and Zach Remillard's up. I'm like, why is he here? Why do we have so many of these middle infielder type players on this active roster right now? We're at like 5 or 6. There is no use for all of these guys. And I guess, Nick, it's kind of to your point of why get rid of Jose Rodriguez, even though I wasn't much on the train of it really mattered. But when you really come back and look at it, it's like, yeah, why are some of these guys on this roster right now? What is the point? What is your end goal? It goes back to the things I've been saying for so many podcasts. People are tired of hearing this. I don't know what Getz's plan is. What are you doing with this amount of under 100 WRC plus middle infielders on this active roster? What is your end goal? I don't know. Because it's not defense anymore. That hasn't worked. So what are we doing?
I really don't want to beat a dead horse here, but man, does it not a day go by where that Jake Berger, Jake Eater trade just not look worse. Just genuinely, because if you would have kept a Jake Berger around for especially coming into this season, and you're not necessarily forcing time away from Yoel Moncada because he's really in an opportunity where A is getting paid, so he's going to play on the Chicago White Sox. If you're getting paid, they're going to force you out there. And B, it was an opportunity really for him to kind of prove that he belonged with the team past this season, even though it was always very, very lofty that was going to actually happen. And with an injury like this, this could have been a situation where Jake Berger really could have just taken the reins as, you know, a minus defender, but a pretty proven bat in the lineup to play third base well enough to be able to win us some baseball games. It's a real shame. That's why not even necessarily trading Jake Berger bothered me in the first place, but the timing of it just felt completely wrong. And now we're in a situation where, you know, a guy like Lenin Sosa, I am actually really excited for him to get an opportunity because we've seen the potential in the minors. We just have not seen it come together in the majors. And it's always been a situation where he'll get a spot opportunity or he'll get called up, just get sent back down. Like, this is the time for him to show that he belongs as a major leaguer on a roster. Like, this, the time is now. You know, even if he plays at a respectable level, maybe not a starting level, that earns you a spot on a bench for years. You know what I mean? Like, because he plays good enough defense to be able to pull that off as well.
You know, I love your general attempt at positivity in many cases, Duke. I used to try that, and I've since soured on that. It's kind of relevant to what I want to be kind of my final thought of the podcast here. Gentlemen, I'd like you to tell me who said these words. Quote, I'll realistically say 72 to 73 wins. If everything were to possibly go right, I could see us finishing right at or right under 500 and possibly winning the AL Central. Who said those words?
That's me.
You want to check that at all?
No, because everything possibly has gone wrong. I said if everything went right.
Let me give you some shit. Come on. Let me give you some shit.
I'm not going to let you have it because I know it'll bug you more if I don't.
No, either way.
But
you know what? It goes along with someone needs to try a little bit element of positivity here. So I do appreciate that is my larger point.
When it comes to like player evaluations, I try not to go too far into that because then it just kind of clouds my judgment altogether. But, you know, and I say it every year, it's when I'm heading into spring training and we kind of start getting out of spring training, I see some potential guys pop up. I get a little bit overzealous and I say things like that are going to age like milk. I can own it though. That's fine. It's a terrible take. But I mean, that's why I always try prefacing stuff like that, because I know like there's such a low hit rate on something like that, where it's like, well, I could just add in if everything goes right, because then if it doesn't, I can own it and be like, okay, but yeah, I said that.
The White Sox way. If everything goes right, the White Sox way.
But if everything were to go right, I look like a genius. So, I mean, it's a win-win.
If everything goes right, the White Sox way. I'm only making fun of you because I can. And part of my preparation for this podcast, we got cut short, was, would you change your win-loss preseason predictions? We got cut short because we decided to argue. I had that lined up to make fun of you, and I didn't want to miss that opportunity. So I'm still taking it, and I'm forcing it in there.
Fair play. You've earned a golf clap from me. Fair play. No, that's, listen. And you know, it's funny because Beef Loaf, like, his eyes popped when I said it too. And I knew it wasn't going to age great, but it is what it is. You know, it's
our job.
It's hopeless optimism.
Yeah.
Watching a Jerry Reinsdorf franchise. Like, I know better, but I always convince myself, oh, maybe just once. I swear, dude, 2005 ruined me. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have this week for the Sox on 35th podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the website, SoxOn35th.com. Oh, dude, I'm not talking about Tommy Pham. Also, be sure to check out the website, SoxOn35th.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SoxOn35th to stay up to date with your Chicago White Sox. This has been Duke Coughlin, joined as always by Jordan Lozowski and Nick Gower. We'll be back next week as we cover another week of White Sox baseball. Thank you, and go Sox.
And apparently we'll wait to cover Tommy Pham until next week. Go Sox.
Go Sox.